The light feathery snow falling on the city of Kyrian dimmed the morning sunlight only a little, just muting the brightness. From the tall narrow window in the Sun Palace, fitted with a casement of good glass panes against the cold, Samitsu could see clearly the wooden scaffolding erected around the ruined section of the palace, broken cubes of dark stone still littered with rubble, and stepped towers that stopped abruptly short of equaling the rest of the palace's towers. One, the Tower of the Risen Sun, was simply no longer there. Several of the city's fabled topless towers loomed through the drifting white flakes, enormous square spires with huge buttresses, much taller by far than any in the palace, despite its location on the highest hill, in a city of hills. They were wrapped in their own scaffolds, and still not completely rebuilt 20 years after the Aiel had burned them. Another 20 might see them done. There were no workmen clambering along the planks on any of the scaffolding, of course, not in this weather. She found herself wishing the snow could give her a respite, too. When Catswain departed a week past, leaving her in charge, her task had appeared straightforward. Make sure the Kyrianan pot did not begin to boil again. That had appeared a simple task at the time, though she had seldom dabbled in politics to speak of. Only one noble retained sizable forces under arms, and Dobrain was cooperative for the most part, seeming to want everything kept quiet. Of course, he had accepted that fool appointment as steward of Kyrian for the Dragon Reborn. The boy had named a steward of Tyr, too, a man who had been in rebellion against him a month gone. If he had done as much in Ilion, it seemed all too probable. Those appointments would cause no end of trouble for sisters to sort out before all was said and done. The boy brought nothing but trouble. Yet so far, Dobrain seemed to be using his new post only to run the city, and to quietly rally support for Elaine Trakan's claim to the Sun Throne, if she ever made one. Samitsu was satisfied to leave it at that, not caring one way or another who took the Sun Throne. She did not care much for Kyrian at all. The falling snow beyond her window swirled in a gust of wind like a white kaleidoscope. So tranquil. Had she ever valued tranquility before? She certainly could not recall it if she had. Neither the possibility of Elaine Trakand taking the throne nor Dobrain's new title had brought nearly as much consternation as the ridiculous and ridiculously persistent rumors about the Al-Thor boy going to Tar Valon to submit to Elida. Though she had done nothing to quell those. That tale had everyone from nobles to stablemen half afraid to breathe, which was very well and good for maintaining the peace. The game of houses had ground to a halt. Well, compared to how matters normally were in Kyrian. The Aiel who came into the city from their huge camp a few miles east very likely helped, however much they were hated by the general run of folk. Everyone knew they followed the Dragon Reborn, and no one wanted to risk finding themselves on the wrong end of thousands of Aiel's spears. Young Al-Thor was much more useful absent than present. Rumors out of the west of Aiel raiding elsewhere, looting, burning, killing indiscriminately, so merchants' hearsay claimed, gave people another reason to step gingerly with those here. In fact, there seemed to be no burrs to prick Kyrian out of its quiet, aside from the occasional street brawl between Forgaters and city folk, who considered the noisy, brightly clad Forgaters as alien as the Aiel, and a good deal safer to fight. The city was crowded to the attics, with people sleeping anywhere they could find shelter from the cold, yet food supplies were more than adequate, if not overabundant, and trade was actually better than expected in winter. All in all, she should have felt content that she was carrying out Cadswain's instructions as well as the Green could wish for, except that Cadswain would expect more. She always did. "Are you listening to me, Samitsu?" Sighing, Samitsu turned from the peaceful view through the window, taking pains not to smooth her yellow-slashed skirts. The Jacanda-made silver bells in her hair tinkled faintly, but today the sound failed to soothe her. At the best of times, she did not feel entirely comfortable in her apartments in the palace, though a blazing fire in the wide marble fireplace gave a good warmth, and the bed in the next room had the best quality feather mattresses and goose-down pillows. All three of her rooms were overly ornate, in the severe Kyrianan fashion, the white ceiling plaster worked in interlocking squares, the wide bar cornices heavily gilded, and the wooden wall panels polished to a soft glow, yet dark even so. The furnishings were darker still, and massively constructed, edged with thin lines of gold leaf and inlaid with patterned ivory wedges. The flowered Tyran carpet in this room seemed garishly disordered compared to everything else, and emphasized the surrounding stiffness. It all seemed too much like a cage of late. What really discomfited her, though, was the woman with her hair in ringlets to her shoulders, standing in the middle of the carpet, fists on her hips, a belligerent set to her chin, and a frown narrowing her blue eyes. Sashal wore the great serpent ring, of course, on her right hand, but also an Aiel necklace and bracelet, fat beads of silver and ivory intricately worked and carved, gaudy against her high-necked dress of brown wool, which was plain, if fine and well cut. Not crude pieces, certainly, but flamboyant, and hardly the sort a sister would wear. The oddity of that jewelry might hold the key to much, if Samitsu could ever find the reason behind it. The wise ones, especially Sorelia, looked at her as if she were a fool for not knowing without asking, and refused to be bothered with answering. They did that all too often. Most especially Sorelia. Samitsu was unused to being thought a fool, and she disliked it immensely. Not for the first time, she found it difficult to meet the other sister's gaze. Sashal was the major reason contentment eluded her, no matter how well everything was going otherwise. Most maddening, Sashal was a red, yet despite her Aja, she was oath-sworn to young Althor. How could any Aes Sedai swear fealty to anyone or anything other than the White Tower itself? How in the light could a red swear to a man who could channel? Maybe Varin had been right about Tavir and twisting chance. Samitsu could not begin to think of any other reason for 31 sisters, 5 of them red, to take such an oath. The Lady Aileel has been approached by lords and ladies who represent most of House Riatan's strength, she replied, much more patiently than she felt. They want her to take the high seat of Riatan, and she wants White Tower approval. Aes Sedai approval, at least. For something to do besides match stares, and likely lose, she moved to a blackwood table where a gold-worked silver pitcher sitting on a silver tray still gave off the faint scent of spices. Filling a cup with mulled wine provided an excuse to break the fleeting eye contact. Needing an excuse made her replace the pitcher on the tray with a sharp clink. She found herself avoiding looking at Sashal too often. Even now she realized she was looking at the other woman sideways. To her frustration, she could not quite make herself turn completely to meet her stare. Tell her no, Sashal. Her brother was still alive when last seen, and rebellion against the Dragon Reborn is nothing that need concern the tower, certainly not now it's done with. The memory arose of Toram Riatan as last seen, running off into a strange fog that could take on solid form and kill, a fog that resisted the one power. The shadow had walked outside the walls of Kyrian that day. Samitsu's voice tightened from the effort to stop it short of trembling, not with fear, but anger. That had been the day she failed at healing young Althor. She hated failures, hated remembering them, and she should not have to explain herself. Most of Riatan's strength is not all. Those still tied to Toram will oppose her. With force of arms, if necessary, and in any case fostering upheaval inside the houses themselves is no way to maintain the peace. There is a precarious balance in Kyrian now, Sashal, but it is a balance, and we mustn't disturb it. She managed to stop short of saying Cadswain would be displeased if they did. That would hardly carry weight with Sashal. Upheaval will come whether or not we foster it, the other sister said firmly. Her frown had faded as soon as Samitsu showed she had been listening, though the set of her jaw remained. Perhaps it was stubbornness rather than belligerence, yet that hardly mattered. The other woman was not arguing or trying to convince her, just stating her own position. and most galling of all, plainly doing that much as a courtesy. The Dragon Reborn is the herald of upheaval and change, Samitsu. The herald foretold. And if he weren't, this is Kyrian. Do you think they have really stopped playing at Desdemar? The surface of the water may be still, but the fish never stop swimming. A red, preaching the Dragon Reborn like a street corner demagogue. Light. And if you are wrong? In spite of herself, Samitsu bit off the words. Sashal, burn her, maintained a perfect serenity. Aileel has forsworn any claim to the Sun Throne in favor of Elaine Trakand, which is what the Dragon Reborn desires, and she is ready to swear fealty to him if I ask it. Toram led an army against Rand Althor. I say the change is worth making and the chance worth taking, and I will tell her so. The bells in Samitsu's hair chimed at an irritated shake of her head, and she barely managed to stop herself from sighing again. 18 of those dragon-sworn sisters remained in Kyrian. Cadswain had carried some away with her, then sent Alana back to take off still more, and others of the 18 besides Sashal stood higher than she, but the Aiel wise ones kept them out of her way. In principle, she disapproved of how that was done. Aes Sedai could not be apprentices. Not to anyone. It was outrageous. But in practice, it did make her job easier. They could not meddle or try to take charge with wise ones running their lives and watching over their every hour. Unfortunately, for some reason she could not learn, the wise ones looked differently on Sashal and the other two sisters who had been stilled at Dumai's Wells. Stilled. She felt a faint shiver at the thought, but only faint, and it would be less if she ever managed to work out how Dahmer Flynn had healed what could not be healed. At least someone could heal stilling, even if it was a man. A man channeling. Light, how the horror of yesterday became merely the uneasiness of today, once you grew accustomed. She was sure that Cadswain would have arranged matters with the Wise Ones before leaving, had she known about the difference with Sashala and Ergine and Ronyla. At least, she thought she was sure. This was not the first time she had been pulled into one of the legendary Green's designs. Cadswain could be more devious than a blue, schemes inside plots wrapped in stratagems and all hidden behind still others. Some were planned to fail in order to help others succeed, and only Cadswain knew which were which. Not at all a comforting thought. In any case, those three sisters were free to come and go as they desired, do as they desired. And they certainly felt no need to follow the guidance Cadswain had left behind, or to follow the sister she had named to lead. Only their mad oath to Althor guided or constrained them. Samitsu had never felt weak or ineffectual in her life except when her talent failed her, yet she very much wished that Cadswain would return and take matters out of her hands. A few words delivered in Aileel's ear would quench any desire the lady had to mount the high seat, of course, yet it would come to nothing unless she found some way to deflect Sashal from her purpose. No matter that Aileel feared having her silly secrets aired abroad, inconsistency in what Aes Sedai told her could well make her decide it was better to try vanishing to her country estates rather than risk offending a sister whatever she did. Cadswain would be upset over losing Aileel. Samitsu herself would be upset. Aileel was a conduit into half the plots brewing among the nobles, a gauge to be sure those intrigues were all still petty and unlikely to bring any major disturbance. The cursed Red knew that. And once Sashal gave Aileel this permission, it would be her the woman came running to with her news, not Samitsu Tamagawa. While Samitsu was floundering in her quandary, the door to the hallway opened to admit a pale, stern-faced Kyrianan woman, a hand shorter than either Aes Sedai. Her hair was in a thick gray roll on the nape of her neck, and she wore an unadorned gray dress so dark it was nearly black, the current livery of a Sun Palace servant. Servants never announced themselves or asked admittance, of course, but Corgaida Maran Devon was hardly just another servant. The heavy, silvery ring of long keys at her waist was a badge of office. Whoever ruled Kyrian, The holder of the keys ruled the Sun Palace in simple fact, and there was nothing submissive in Korgaida's manner. She made a minimal curtsy carefully aimed halfway between Samitsu and Sashal. "I was asked to report anything unusual," she said to the heir, though it had been Samitsu who asked. Very likely she had known of the power struggle between them as soon as they did themselves. Little in the palace escaped her. "I'm told there is an Ogier in the kitchens. He and a young man supposedly are looking after workers' masons, but I have never heard of Ogier and human masons working together. And Steading Tsofu sent word no masons would be available from any steading for the foreseeable future when we inquired after the incident." The pause was barely perceptible, and her grave expression did not alter, but half the gossip about the attack on the Sun Palace laid it to Althor's doing, the other half to Aes Sedai. A few tales mentioned the Forsaken, but only to pair them with either Althor or the Aes Sedai. Pursing her lips in thought, Samitsu set aside the cursed tangle Kyrianen made of everything they touched. Denials of Aes Sedai involvement did little good. The three oaths went only so far, in a city where a simple yes or no could give rise to 6 contradictory rumors. But Ogier. The palace kitchens scarcely took in stray passers-by, yet the cooks very likely would give an Ogier a hot meal just for the strangeness of seeing him. Ogier were even more uncommon than usual this last year or so. A few were still seen now and then, but walking as fast as only an Ogier could, and seldom stopping in one place more than long enough to sleep. They rarely traveled with humans, much less worked with them. The pairing tickled something in her mind, though. Hoping to tease whatever it was into the open, she opened her mouth to ask a few questions. "Thank you, Korgaida," Sashal said with a smile. "You've been most helpful. But if you will leave us now?" Being abrupt with the holder of the keys was a good way to find yourself with dirty bed linens and poorly spiced meals, unemptied chamber pots and messages that went astray, 1,000 annoyances that could make life a misery and leave you wading in mud trying to accomplish anything at all. Yet somehow that smile appeared to take the sting out of her words for Korgaida. The gray-haired woman bowed her head slightly in assent and again made the smallest possible curtsy. This time, obviously, to Sashal. No sooner had the door closed behind the gray-haired woman than Samitsu thumped her silver cup back on the tray hard enough to splash warm wine over her wrist and rounded on the red sister. She was on the brink of losing control of Aileel, and now the Sun Palace itself appeared to be slipping through her fingers. It was as likely Korgaida would sprout wings and fly as keep silent about what she had seen here, and whatever she said would flash through the palace and infect every servant down to the men who mucked out the stables. That final curtsy had made it quite clear what she thought. Light, but Samitsu hated Kyrian. The customs of civility between sisters were deeply ingrained, but Sashal did not stand high enough to make her hold her tongue in the face of this disaster, and she intended to deliver the rough side of it. Frowning at the other woman, though, she saw Sashal's face, really saw it, perhaps for the first time, and suddenly she knew why it troubled her so, perhaps even why she had found it difficult to look directly at the Red Sister. It was no longer an Aes Sedai face, outside of time and standing apart from age. Most people were unsure of the look until it was pointed out, but it was unmistakable to another sister. Perhaps some bits remained, scraps that made Sashal appear closer to beautiful than she really was, yet anyone at all would put an age to her, somewhere short of her middle years. The realization froze Samitsu's tongue. What was known about women who had been stilled was little better than rumor. They ran away and hid from other sisters. Eventually, they died. Usually, they died soon rather than late. The loss of Sidar was more than most women could bear for very long. But it was all really tittle-tattle. As far as she knew, no one in a very long time had had the nerve to try learning more. The rarely acknowledged fear in the darkest corner of every sister's head that the same fate might come to her one day in a careless moment kept anyone from wanting to know too much, Even Aes Sedai could hide their eyes when they did not want to see. There were always those rumors, though, almost never mentioned, and so vague you could never recall where you heard them first, whispers on the edge of hearing, yet forever floating about. One that Samitsu had only half remembered, till now, said that a woman who was stilled grew young again, if she lived. It had always seemed ludicrous, till now. Regaining the ability to channel had not given Sashal back everything. Once more she would have to work with the power for years to gain the face that would proclaim her Aes Sedai to any sister who could see her clearly. Or would she regain it? It seemed inevitable, yet this was unmapped terrain. And if her face was changed, was anything else about her changed as well? Samitsu shivered, harder than she had for the thought of stilling. Perhaps it was as well she had gone slow in trying to puzzle out Dahmer's way of healing. Fingering her Aiel necklace, Sashal seemed unaware that Samitsu had any grievance, unaware of Samitsu's scrutiny. "This may be nothing, or it may warrant looking into," she said. "But Khorgaida was only reporting what she heard. If we want to learn anything, we must go and see for ourselves." Without another word, she gathered her skirts and started out of the apartments, leaving Samitsu only a choice between following or remaining behind. It was intolerable, yet remaining was unthinkable. Sashal was no taller than she, not to speak of, but she had to hurry to keep up as the red glided swiftly along wide, square-vaulted corridors. Taking the lead was out of the question unless she chose to run. She fumed in silence, although it required gritting her teeth. Arguing with another sister in public was improper at best. Worse, without any doubt, it would be futile, and that would only dig the hole she was in deeper. She felt a very great desire to kick something. Stand lamps at regular intervals gave plenty of light, even in the darkest stretches of hallway, but there was little color or decoration beyond the occasional tapestry, with everything in it arranged in orderly fashion, whether animals being hunted or nobles fighting gallantly in battle. A few niches in the walls held ornaments of gold or seafolk porcelain, and in some corridors the cornices were worked in friezes, most left unpainted. That was all. Kyrianen hid their opulence out of public view, as they did with so much. The serving men and women who hurried industriously along the halls like streams of ants wore livery the color of charcoal, except for those in service to nobles resident in the palace, who seemed bright beside the rest, with their house badges embroidered on their breasts and their collars and sometimes sleeves marked in house colors. One or two even had a coat or dress all in house colors, and appeared almost an outlander among the others. But they all kept their eyes down and barely paused long enough to offer quick bows or curtsies to the two sisters as they passed. The Sun Palace required countless hundreds of servants, and it seemed they were all scurrying about this morning, tending their chores. Nobles strolled in the hallways too, offering their own cautious courtesies to the Aes Sedai as they passed, perhaps with a greeting carefully balanced between an illusion of equality and the true state of affairs, spoken in low voices that did not carry far. They proved the old saying that strange times make for strange traveling companions. Old enmities had been put away in the face of new dangers, for the moment. Here, two or three pale Kyrianen lords in dark silk coats with thin stripes of color across the front, some with the fronts of their heads shaved and powdered soldier fashion, promenaded alongside an equal number of dark tyrans, taller in their bright coats with fat striped sleeves. There, a tyran noblewoman in a snug pearl-sewn cap, colorfully brocaded gown, and pale lace ruff, walked arm in arm beside a shorter Kyrianen noble, with her hair in an elaborate tower that reached well above her companion's head, smoky gray lace under her chin, and narrow stripes of her house colors cascading down the front of her wide-skirted dark silk, all like bosom friends and trusted confidants. Some pairings did look odder than others. A number of women had begun wearing outlandish clothes of late, apparently never noticing how they drew men's eyes and made even the servants struggle not to stare. Tight breeches and a coat barely long enough to cover the hips were not suitable garments for a woman, no matter how much effort went into rich embroidery or patterning the coat with gemstones. Jeweled necklaces and bracelets and pins with sprays of colorful feathers only pointed up the oddity. And those brightly dyed boots, with their heels that added as much as a hand to a woman's height, made them appear in danger of falling down with every swaying step. "Scandalous," Sachal muttered, eyeing one such pair of women and twitching her skirts in displeasure. "Scandalous," Sumitsu murmured before she could stop herself, then snapped her mouth shut so hard her teeth clicked. She needed to control her tongue. Voicing agreement just because she agreed was a habit she could ill afford with Sachal. Still, she could not help glancing back at the pair in disapproval and a bit of wonder. A year ago, Alina Chuliandred and Fionda Anaris would have been at each other's throats, or rather have had their armsmen at one another's throats. But then who would have expected to see Bertoma Saigon walking peacefully with Weramon Saniago, neither man reaching for the dagger at his belt? Strange times and strange traveling companions. Doubtless they were playing the game of houses, maneuvering for advantage as they always had, yet dividing lines that once were graven in stone now turned out to have been drawn on water instead. Very strange times. The kitchens were on the lowest level of the Sun Palace above ground, at the back, a cluster of stone-walled, beamed-ceiling rooms centered around a long windowless room full of iron stoves and brick ovens and dressed stone fireplaces, and the heat was enough to make anyone forget the snow outside, or even that it was winter. Normally, sweaty-faced cooks and undercooks, as darkly clad as any other palace servants beneath their white aprons, would have been scurrying about getting ready to prepare the midday meal, kneading loaves on long flour-strewn tables topped with marble, basting the joints and fowl that were turning on spits in the fireplaces. Now only the trotting spit-dogs were moving, eager to earn their bits from the joints. Baskets of turnips and carrots stood unpeeled and unchopped, and smells sweet and spicy came from untended pots of sauces. Even the scullions, boys and girls surreptitiously wiping their faces on their aprons, stood on the fringe of a group of women clustered around one of the tables. From the doorway, Sumitsu could see the back of an ogier's head rising above them where he was seated at the table, taller than most men would have been standing up, and broad with it. Of course, Kyrianen were short, by and large, and that helped. She laid a hand on Sachal's arm, and for a wonder the woman stopped where they were without protest.
"Vanished without leaving a clue where he was going?"
the ogier was asking in a deep rumble like the earth shifting, his long tufted ears sticking up through dark hair that hung to his high collar, flicked back and forth uneasily.
"Oh, do stop talking about him, Master Ladar," a woman's voice answered in a quaver that seemed well practiced. "Wicked he was. Tore half the palace apart with the one power he did. He could turn your blood to ice just looking at you and kill you as soon as look. Thousands have died by his own hand, tens of thousands. Oh, I never liked talking about him."
"For someone as never likes talking about something, Eldred Methyn," another woman said sharply. "You surely talk of little else."
Stout and quite tall for a Kyrianen, nearly as tall as Sumitsu herself, with a few strands of grey hair escaping her white plain lace cap, she must have been the chief cook on duty, because everyone Sumitsu could see quickly nodded agreement and twittered with laughter and said, "Oh, right you are, Mistress Beldare," in a particularly sycophantic way. Servants had their own hierarchies, as rigidly maintained as the tower itself.
"But that sort of thing really is not for us to be gossiping over, Master Ladar," the stout woman went on. "Aes Sedai business, that is, and not for the likes of you and me. Tell us more about the borderlands. Have you really seen Trollocs?"
"Aes Sedai," a man muttered. Hidden by the crowd around the table, he had to be Ladar's companion. Sumitsu could see no grown men among the kitchen folk this morning.
Tell me, do you really think they bonded those men you were talking about, those Ashaman, as warders? And what about the one who died? You never said how.
Why, it was the dragon reborn as killed him,
Eldred piped up.
And what else would Aes Sedai bond a man as? Oh, terrible they was, them Ashaman. Turn you to stone with a look they could. You can tell one just by looking at him, you know. Frightful, glowing eyes they have.
Be quiet, Eldred, Mistress Beldair said firmly. Maybe they was Ashaman and maybe not, Master Underhill. Maybe they was bonded and maybe not. All I or anyone else can say is they was with him.
The emphasis in her voice made plain who she was talking about. Eldred might consider Randall Thor fearful, but this woman did not want to so much as name him.
And soon after he left, suddenly the Aes Sedai was telling them what to do, and they was doing it. Of course, any fool knows to do as an Aes Sedai says. Anyway, those fellers are all gone off now. Why are you so interested in them, Master Underhill? Is that an Andoran name?
Ladar threw back his head and laughed, a booming sound that filled the room. His ears twitched violently.
Oh, we want to know everything about the places we visit, Mistress Beldair. The borderlands, you say? You might think it's cold here, but we've seen trees crack open like nuts on the fire from the cold in the borderlands. You have blocks of ice in the river floating down from upstream, but we've seen rivers as wide as the Alguenya frozen so merchants can drive loaded trains of wagons across them, and men fishing through holes cut in ice nearly a span thick. At night there are sheets of light in the sky that seem to crackle, bright enough to dim the stars, and...
Even Mistress Beldair was leaning toward the Ogier, caught up. But one of the young scullions, too short to see past the adults, glanced behind him, and his eyes went wide when they lit on Samitsu and Sashal. His gaze stayed fixed on them as if trapped, but he fumbled with one hand till he could tug at Mistress Beldair's sleeve. The first time she shook him off without looking around. At a second tug, she turned her head with a scowl that vanished in a blink when she, too, saw the Aes Sedai.
"Grace favor you, Aes Sedai," she said, hastily tucking stray hair back under her cap as she bobbed her curtsy. "How may I serve you?"
Ladar broke off short in mid-sentence, and his ears stiffened for a moment. He did not look toward the doorway.
"We wish to speak with your visitors," Sashal said, moving into the kitchen. "We won't disrupt your kitchen for long." "Of course, Aes Sedai."
If the stout woman felt any surprise at two sisters wanting to talk to kitchen visitors, she showed none. Head swinging from side to side to take in everyone, she clapped her plump hands and began spouting orders.
"Eldred, those turnips will never peel themselves. Who was watching the fig sauce? Dried figs are hard to come by. Where is your basting spoon, Casey? Andil, run, fetch some—"
Cooks and scullions scattered in every direction, and a clatter of pots and spoons quickly filled the kitchen, though everyone was plainly making an effort to be as quiet as possible so as not to disturb the Aes Sedai. They were plainly making an effort not to even look in their direction, though that involved some contortion. The Ogier rose to his feet smoothly, his head coming near the thick ceiling beams. His clothing was what Samitsu remembered from meeting Ogier before, a long dark coat that flared over turned-down boots. Stains on his coat said he had been traveling hard. Ogier were a fastidious people. He only half turned to face her and Sashal even as he made a bow, and he rubbed at his wide nose as if it itched, partially hiding his broad face, but he appeared young for an Ogier.
"Forgive us, Aes Sedai," he murmured, "but we really must be moving on."
Bending to gather a huge leather scrip that had a large rolled blanket tied across the top and showed the impressions of several square shapes packed around whatever else was stuffed inside, he hoisted the broad strap over one shoulder. His capacious coat pockets bulged with angular shapes, too.
"We have a long way to go before nightfall."
His companion remained seated, though, his hands spread on the tabletop. a pale-haired young man with a week's growth of beard who seemed to have slept more than one night in his rumpled brown coat. He watched the Aes Sedai warily, with dark eyes that belonged on a cornered fox. "Where are you going that you can reach by nightfall?" Sachal did not stop until she was standing in front of the young Ogier, close enough to need to crane her neck to look up at him, though she made it seem graceful rather than awkward, as it should have been. "Are you on your way to the meeting we've heard about? In Steading Shangtai? Master Ladar, is it?" His tall ears twitched violently, then were still, and his teacup-sized eyes narrowed almost as warily as the young man's, till the dangling ends of his eyebrows trailed onto his cheeks.
"Ladar, son of Shandin, son of Koimal, Aes Sedai," he said reluctantly. "But I'm certainly not going to the great stump. Why, the elders wouldn't let me close enough to hear what was being said."
He gave a deep bass chuckle that sounded forced.
"We can't get where we're going tonight, Aes Sedai. But every league behind us is a league we don't have to walk tomorrow. We need to be on our way."
The unshaven young man stood up, running a hand nervously along the long hilt of the sword belted at his waist, yet he made no move to pick up the scrip and blanket roll at his feet and follow as the Ogier started toward the door that led to the street, even when the Ogier said over his shoulder,
"We need to go now, Carlden."
Sachal glided fluidly into the Ogier's path, though she had to take three strides to his one. "You were asking after work as a mason, Master Ladar," she said in tones brooking no nonsense. "But your hands are not as calloused as any mason's I've ever seen. It would be best for you to answer my questions." Suppressing a triumphant smile, Samitsu moved up beside the Red Sister. So Sachal thought she could simply push her aside and ferret out what was going on, did she? The woman was in for a surprise. "You really must stay a while longer," she said to the Ogier in a low voice. The noise in the kitchen should keep anyone from overhearing, yet there was no need to take chances. "When I came to the Sun Palace, I had already heard of a young Ogier, a friend of Randall Thor. He left Kyrian some months past, in company with a young man named Carlden. Isn't that right, Loyal?" The Ogier's ears wilted. The young man bit off a coarse curse he should have known better than to mouth in front of sisters.
"I leave when I want to leave, Aes Sedai," he said harshly, but in a low voice.
For the most part he divided his gaze between her and Sachal, yet he was watchful for any of the kitchen workers who might come near. He did not wish to be overheard either.
"Before I do, I want some answers. What happened to my friends? And him? Did he go mad?"
Loyal sighed heavily and made a pacifying gesture with one huge hand.
"Be easy, Carlden," he murmured. "Rand wouldn't like you starting trouble with Aes Sedai. Be easy."
Carlden's scowl only deepened. Abruptly it occurred to Samitsu that she could have handled this better. Those were not the eyes of a cornered fox, but a wolf. She had grown too accustomed to Dahmer and Jahar and Aben, safely bonded and tamed. That might be an overstatement, though Maurice was making an effort with Jahar. That was Maurice's way. Yet it seemed the horror of yesterday could become the complacency of today, after long enough exposure. Carlden Manfor was an Ashaman, too, and neither bonded nor tame. Was he embracing the male half of the power? She almost laughed. Did birds fly? Sachal was watching the young man with a studying frown, her hands much too still on her skirts, but Samitsu was glad not to see the light of Sidar around her. Ashaman could feel it when a woman held the power, and that might make him act precipitately. Certainly she and Samitsu together could handle him. Could they, if he already held the power? Of course they could, of course. But it would be much better if they did not have to. Sachal certainly was making no move to take charge now, so Samitsu laid a hand lightly on his left arm. Through his coat sleeve it felt like a bar of iron. So he was as uneasy as she. As uneasy as she? Light, but Dahmer and those other two had spoiled all her instincts. "He seemed sane as most men when I last saw him," she said softly, with just a slight emphasis. None of the kitchen folk were nearby, but a few had begun sneaking peeks toward the table. Loyal exhaled heavily in relief, a sound like wind rushing across the mouth of a cave, but she kept her attention on Carlden. "I don't know where he is, but he was alive as of a few days ago." Alana had been close-mouthed as a muscle beyond that, and overbearing, too, with Cadswain's note in her fist. "Fedwin Moore died of poison, I fear, but I have no idea who gave it to him." To her surprise, Carlden merely shook his head with a rueful grimace and muttered something incomprehensible about wine. As for the others, they became warders of their own free will. Her Roshan certainly had not wanted to be a warder until she decided she wanted him for one. Even a woman who was not Aes Sedai could usually make a man decide the way she wanted. They thought it a better choice, safer, than returning to the others like you. You see, the damage here was done with Saidin. You understand who must have been behind it? It was an attempt to kill the one whose sanity you fear for. That did not seem to surprise him either. What sort of men were these, Ashaman? Was their so-called Black Tower a murder pit? The tightness went out of his arm, though, and suddenly he was just a road-weary young man who needed to shave. "Light," he breathed. "What do we do now, Loyal? Where do we go?"
"I don't know,"
Loyal replied, his shoulders sagging tiredly and his long ears drooping.
We have to find him, Carlden. Somehow. We can't give up now. We have to let him know we did what he asked, as much as we could."
And what was it Althor had asked, Samitsu wondered. With a little luck, she could learn a great deal from these two. A tired man, or Ogier, feeling lost and alone, was ripe for answering questions. Carlden gave a small jump, his hand tightening on his sword hilt, and she bit back a curse of her own as a palace serving woman came running into the room with her skirts gathered almost to her knees. "Lord Dobrain's been murdered," the serving woman squealed. "We will all be killed in our beds. My own eyes have seen the dead walking old Maringill himself, and my man says spirits will kill you if there has been a murder done. They—" Her mouth froze open when she caught the presence of Aes Sedai, and she skidded to a halt, still clutching her skirts. The kitchen folk seemed frozen, too, all watching the Aes Sedai from the corners of their eyes to see what they would do.
"Not Dobrain,"
Loyal moaned, ears laying flat against his head.
"Not him."
He looked as much angry as saddened, his face stony. Samitsu did not think she had ever seen an Ogier angry. "What is your name?" Sachal demanded of the serving woman, before Samitsu could even part her lips. "How do you know he was murdered? How do you even know he's dead?" The woman swallowed, her eyes held by Sachal's cool gaze. "Sarah, Aes Sedai," she said hesitantly, bending her knees in a curtsy and only then realizing that she still had her skirts gathered up. Hastily smoothing them down only seemed to fluster her more. "Sarah Doynal? They say... Everybody says Lord Dobrain is... I mean, he was... I mean..." She swallowed again, hard. "They all say his rooms are covered with blood. He was found lying in a great pool of it. With his head cut off, they say." "They say a great many things," Sachal said grimly. "And usually they're wrong. Samitsu, you will come with me. If Lord Dobrain has been injured, you may be able to do something for him. Loyal, Carlden, you come too. I don't want you out of my sight before I have a chance to ask a few questions."
Burn your questions, the young Ashaman growled, shouldering his belongings. I'm leaving.
No, Carlton, Loyal said gently, laying a huge hand on his companion's shoulder. We can't go before we know about Dobrain. He's a friend, Rand's friend, and mine. We can't. Anyway, where are we hurrying to?
Carlton looked away. He had no answer.
Samitsu squeezed her eyes shut and took a deep breath, but there was no help for it. She found herself following Sashal out of the kitchens, once more hurrying to keep up with the other woman's quick, gliding stride. In fact, she found herself half running. Sashal set an even more rapid pace than before. The babbling of voices rose behind them as soon as they were out the door. The kitchen folk probably all were pressing the serving woman for particulars, details she very likely would invent where her knowledge failed. 10 different versions of events would find their way out of that kitchen, if not as many as there were kitchen folk. Worst of all, 10 different versions of events in the kitchen would find their way out, everyone adding to the rumors Korgaida doubtless was already starting. She could hardly recall a day that had gone so badly for her so suddenly, like slipping on one patch of ice only to find another under her feet, then another. Cadswain would have her hide to make gloves after this. At least Loyal and Carlton trailed after Sashal as well. Whatever she learned from them might still be put to advantage, a way to salvage something. Scurrying along at Sashal's side, she studied them in brief glances over her shoulder. Taking short strides to keep from overrunning the Aes Sedai, the Ogier was frowning in worry. Over Dobrain, very likely, but also perhaps over only completing his mysterious task as well as he could. That was a mystery she intended to solve. The young Ashaman had no difficulty keeping up, though he wore an expression of stubborn reluctance and his hand caressed his sword hilt. The danger in him did not lie in steel. He stared suspiciously at the backs of the Aes Sedai ahead, once meeting Samitsu's glance with a dark glower. He had the sense to keep his mouth shut, though. She would have to find a way to pry it open later for more than snarling. Sashal never glanced behind to make sure the pair were following, but then she had to hear the thud of the Ogier's boots on the floor tiles. Her face was thoughtful, and Samitsu would have given a great deal to know what she was thinking. Sashal might be oath-sworn to Randall Thor, but what protection did that give to an Ashaman? She was red, after all. That had not changed with her face. Light. This could be the worst patch of ice of all. It was a long, arduous climb from the kitchens to Lord Dobrain's apartments in the Tower of the Full Moon, which was usually set aside for visiting nobility of high rank. And all along the way, Samitsu saw the evidence that Sarah had been far from the first to hear what the ever-anonymous they had to say. Rather than endless streams of servants flowing along the corridors, small, excited knots stood whispering anxiously. At sight of the Aes Sedai, they sprang apart and scurried away. A handful did gape at seeing an Ogier striding through the palace, yet for the most part they all but fled. The nobles who had been about before had all vanished, doubtless back to their own rooms, to mull over what opportunities and hazards Dobrain's death afforded them. Whatever Sashal thought, Samitsu no longer doubted. If Dobrain had been alive, his own servants would have put paid to the rumor already. For further confirmation, the hallway outside Dobrain's rooms was crowded with ashen-faced servants, their sleeves ringed to the elbows in the blue and white of House Taborwin. Some wept, and others looked lost, their foundation stone pulled out from under them. At a word from Sashal, they stood aside for the Aes Sedai, moving drunkenly or mechanically. Dazed eyes swept by the Ogier without actually registering what they saw. Few remembered to make even half-hearted curtsies. Inside, the anteroom was almost as full of Dobrain's servants, most staring as if pole-axed. Dobrain himself lay motionless on a litter in the middle of the large room, his head still attached to his body,
but his eyes closed, and a drying sheet of blood from a long cut in his scalp across his still features. A dark trickle had leaked from his slack mouth. Two serving men with tears streaming down their cheeks paused in the act of laying a white cloth over his face at the entrance of the Aes Sedai. Dobrain did not appear to be breathing, and there were blood-stained gashes in the chest of his coat, with its thin stripes of color that marched down to his knees. Beside the litter, a dark blot larger than a man's body marred the green and yellow Tyran maze of the fringed carpet. Anyone who lost that much blood had to be dead. Two other men lay sprawled on the floor, one with death-glazed eyes gazing at the ceiling, the other on his side, an ivory knife hilt sticking up from his ribs where the blade had surely reached his heart. Short, pale-skinned Kyrianen both wore the livery of palace servants, but a servant never carried the long wooden-handled dagger that lay beside each corpse. A House Taborwin man, his foot drawn back to kick one of the corpses, hesitated on seeing the two sisters, then planted his boot hard in the dead man's ribs anyway. Clearly, proper decorum lay far from anyone's mind at the moment. "Move that cloth out of the way," Sashal told the men by the litter. "Samitsu, see whether you can still help Lord Dobrain." Whatever she believed, instinct had moved Samitsu toward Dobrain, but that command, it was clearly a command, put a stutter in her step. Gritting her teeth, she kept moving and knelt carefully beside the litter, on the side away from the still damp blot, to put her hands on Dobrain's blood-soaked head. She never minded getting blood on her hands, but bloodstains were impossible to get out of silk unless you channeled, and she still felt a pang of guilt at the waste when she used the power for something so mundane. The necessary weaves were second nature to her, so much so that she embraced the source and delved the Kyrianen lord without a thought, and blinked in surprise. Instinct had made her go ahead, though she had been certain there were three corpses in the room, yet life still flickered in Dobrain. A tiny, guttering flame that the shock of healing might well extinguish. The shock of the healing she knew. Her eyes searched out the pale-haired Ashaman. He was crouched beside one of the dead servants, calmly searching the man, oblivious of the shocked stares of the living servants. One of the women suddenly noticed Loyal standing just inside the door and goggled as if he had leapt out of thin air. With his arms folded across his chest and a grim expression on his broad face, the Ogier looked as though he were standing guard. "Carldin, do you know the kind of healing that Dahmer Flynn uses?" Samitsu asked. "The kind that uses all of the five powers?" He paused for a moment, frowning at her.
"Flynn? I don't even know what you're talking about. I don't have much talent for healing, anyway."
Eyeing Dobrain, he added,
"He looks dead to me, but I hope you can save him. He was at the wells."
And he bent back to rummaging through the dead servant's coat. Samitsu licked her lips. The thrill of being filled with Sidar always seemed diminished to her in situations like this, situations when all of her possible choices were bad. Carefully, she gathered flows of air, spirit, and water, weaving them just so, the basic weave of healing that every sister knew. No one in living memory had the talent for healing as strongly as she, and most sisters were limited in what they could heal, some to little more than bruises. By herself, she could heal almost as well as a linked circle. Most sisters could not regulate the weave to any degree at all. Most did not even try to learn. She had been able to from the start. Oh, she could not heal one particular thing and leave everything else as it was, the way Dahmer could. What she did would affect everything from the stab wounds to the stuffed nose Dobrain was also suffering from. Delving had told her everything that ailed him. But she could wash away the worst injuries as if they had never been, or heal so whoever she healed appeared to have spent days recovering on her own, or anything in between. Each took no less of her strength, but they did require less from the patient. The smaller the amount of change in the body, the smaller the amount of the body's strength it drained. Only, except for the gash in his scalp, Dobrain's wounds were all serious. 4 deep punctures in his lungs, 2 of them gashing the heart as well. The strongest healing would kill him before his wounds finished closing, while the weakest would revive him long enough to drown in his own blood. She had to choose somewhere in the middle and hope that she was right. "I am the best that ever has been," she thought firmly. Cadswain had told her that. "I am the best." Altering the weave slightly, she let it sink into the motionless man. Some of the servants cried out in alarm as Dobrain's body convulsed. He half sat up, deep-set eyes opening wide, long enough for what sounded all too much like a long death rattle to rush out of his mouth. Then his eyes rolled back in his head, and he slipped from her grasp, thudding back down onto the litter. Hastily she readjusted the weave and delved him again, holding her breath. He lived. By a hair, and so weak he might yet die, but it would not be those stabs that killed him, except indirectly. Even through the drying blood that matted his hair, shaven away from his forehead, she could see the puckered pink line of a fresh, tender scar across his scalp. He would have the same beneath his coat, and he might be troubled by shortness of breath when he exerted himself, if he pulled through. Yet for the moment he did live, and that was all that mattered. For the moment. There was still the matter of who had wanted him dead, and why. Releasing the power, she stood unsteadily. Sidar draining out of her always made her feel tired. One of the serving men, gaping, hesitantly handed her the cloth he had been going to lay on his lord's face, and she used it to wipe her hands. "Take him to his bed," she said. "Get as much mild honey water down him as you can. He needs to gain strength quickly. And find a wise woman, a reader? Yes, a reader. He will need her, too." He was out of her hands now, and herbs might help. At least they were unlikely to harm, coming from a reader, and at worst the woman would make sure they gave him enough honey water and not too much. With much bowing and many murmurs of thanks, 4 of the serving men took up the litter and carried Dobrain deeper into the apartments. Most of the other servants followed hurriedly, wearing expressions of relief, and the rest dashed out into the corridor. An instant later, glad shouts and cheers broke out, and she heard her name nearly as often as Dobrain's. Very gratifying. It would have been more satisfying if Sashal had not smiled and given her an approving nod. Approving? And why not a pat on the head while she was about it? Carldin had paid no mind at all to the healing, insofar as Samitsu had noticed. Finishing his search of the second corpse, he rose and crossed the room to Loyal, attempting to show the Ogier something, shielded by his body, without letting the Aes Sedai notice. Loyal plucked it, a sheet of cream-colored paper, creased from folding, out of the Ashaman's hand and held it up in front of his face, opened out in his thick fingers, ignoring Carlton's scowl.
"But this makes no sense,"
the Ogier muttered, frowning as he read.
"No sense at all. Unless—"
He cut off abruptly, long ears flickering, and exchanged a tense look with the pale-haired fellow, who gave a curt nod.
"Oh, this is very bad,"
Loyal said.
"If there were more than 2, Carlton, if they found—"
He choked off his words again at a frantic headshake from the young man.
"I will see that, please," Sashal said, holding out her hand. And please or no please, it was not a request.
Carldin attempted to snatch the paper from Loyal's hand, but the Ogier calmly handed it to Sashal, who inspected it without any change of expression, then handed it to Samitsu. It was thick paper, smooth and expensive, and new-looking. Samitsu had to control her eyebrows' desire to climb as she read.
"At my command, the bearers of this are to remove certain items which they will know from my apartments and take them out of the Sun Palace. Make them private of my rooms, give them whatever aid they require, and keep silent on this matter in the name of the dragon reborn and on pain of his displeasure.
Dobraine Taberwin. She had seen Dobraine's writing often enough to recognize the rounded hand as his.
Obviously, someone employs a very good forger, she said, earning a quick, contemptuous glance from Sachal. It did seem unlikely he wrote it himself and was stabbed by his own men in mistake, the Red said in cutting tones. Her gaze swung to Loyal and the Ashaman.
What is it they might have found? She demanded. What is it you are afraid they found?
Carlden stared back at her blandly.
I just meant whatever they were looking for, Loyal answered. They had to be here to steal something.
But his tufted ears twitched so hard they almost vibrated before he could master them. Most Ogier made very poor liars, at least while young. Sachal's ringlets swung as she shook her head deliberately.
What you know is important. The pair of you are not leaving until I know it, too.
And how are you going to stop us?
The very quietness of Carlden's words made them more dangerous. He met Sachal's gaze levelly, as if he had not a worry in the world.
Oh, yes, very much a wolf, not a fox.
I thought I'd never find you,
Rosara Medrano announced, marching into that moment of perilous silence, still wearing her red gloves and fur-lined cloak, with the hood thrown back to reveal the carved ivory combs in her black hair. There were damp patches on the shoulders of the cloak from melted snow. A tall woman, as brown as a sun-dark Aiel, she had gone out at first light to try finding spices for some sort of fish stew from her native Tyr. She spared only the briefest glance for Loyal and Carlden, and did not waste a moment inquiring after Dobraine.
A party of sisters has entered the city, Samitsu. I rode like a madwoman to get here ahead of them, but they could be riding in at this moment. There are Ashaman with them, and one of the Ashaman is Loghain.
Carlden barked a rough laugh, and suddenly Samitsu wondered whether she was going to live long enough for Cadzwain to have her hide.